Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
All right, thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Now we're joined by our guest, Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on today, Tommy.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me about your newsletter.
So I run a newsletter called Extra Points, which publishes original reporting and analysis of off-the-field stories that shape college athletics. And that includes everything from NIL to television deals to conference realignment, and then increasingly, and I think especially over these next couple of weeks, the potential impact of political changes on higher education and college sports specifically.
Let's give some background, if we can, about the House settlement, and this is not the House of Representatives, to be clear, and where that case plays into all of this with paying college athletes.
And that's an important distinction to make, especially because I think the House of Representatives will also become involved in this settlement and potentially other major college cases and reform efforts here in the next couple of months. But the House settlement stems from a large class action lawsuit brought by it's named for a former swimmer at Arizona State, but it includes thousands of football, basketball, and other athletes who said that they were denied financial compensation because they weren't allowed to participate in NIL when they were in school, and that they were not allowed to share from any of the revenues from broadcast television, from their NIL use in broadcast television broadcasts during their time. Had the NCAA gone to court, they probably would have lost, and the damages then would have tripled. So we're looking at $5-6 billion in potential damages. This case would have bankrupted the entire organization. So they have sought to settle. That settlement has been was issued a preliminary approval, but is not completely finalized, as athletes can potentially opt out and other entities could issue objections, and the whole process could still be altered and likely won't be finalized until April. But the settlement terms as they currently stand require schools to give back penalties to those previous athletes that will come out of NCAA distributions, March Madness television money, but schools will get less to go pay for these back damages. They will the settlement will allow schools, if they want to, if they opt in, to directly share up to $20 million and change of direct revenue with athletes. They can sign athletes to NIL deals themselves, and then there will be new roster limits rather than scholarship limits for a variety of sports, which will change the number of players that can be on a team from everything from football to swimming to volleyball.
Wow. I don't even know where to start unpacking all of that. First of all, did you say the number was 28? No, wait, 2 billion? How much was the number? They said 2.8 billion?
Okay, well, so for the total damages, had they not gone to trial, would have tripled, which is what happens in antitrust cases. So I believe it was north of 5 billion. This settlement in total will be over $1 billion, but it's spread out over 10 years. But so even, everybody's going to be paying a lot of money.
But even that, as much money as that is, if you look at the number of college athletes who would have a claim or a case, right, for not being compensated, is that going to wind up being one of those class actions where everybody gets $20?
They're going to get more than $20, but, I mean, the attorneys are going to get more of the money. There's going to be some football and basketball players that are a member of the class, maybe people who played in 2017, 2018, they might get $100,000. They might get a little bit more than that. They'll get a real check. There's going to be some volleyball players that might get $18. But it's going to be even more important for the athletes moving forward, because it will mean that a school like LSU or Georgia or Alabama, rather than having to depend completely on a collective, an outside entity to pay athletes directly, the school can do that up to this $20 million-ish salary cap. So current athletes could be in a position to make more cash and more cash directly than they've ever made before.
I was watching the game on LSU-Alabama on Saturday night. My mind wandered a little because, it wasn't much of a game. And I was
just looking
at the sidelines, and I was thinking, well, if you talk about scholarship limits with name, image, and likeness, and this is going to what you just said, where do scholarships really factor into this? Because does the NCAA currently limit how many players you can have on the roster, or can you have as many walk-ons as you want? And if you got somebody that's there for name, image, and likeness, well, the sponsor, whatever you want to call them, could be paying their tuition. So in essence, it's a scholarship, but it really isn't, right?
Yeah. So that happens a little bit right now. The way it's set up for football is the NCAA says you can have up to 85 scholarships. They're all full rides at the FBS level. You can't divide them.
So just to be clear, we're not talking about roster spots. We're talking about scholarships, right?
Yeah, right. No, well, actually, we're talking about different things. So,
okay.
But it's going to change.
Right.
So let me try to back up. As of today, on the LSU football team, LSU can offer 85 full ride scholarships, but they can have up to 120 on the roster. Now, all 120 of those players won't travel to every game, and most of them are going to be walk-ons or practice squad guys. But there's plenty of people in the official team photo that are not on full scholarship. What's going to happen after the House case, if it is approved as currently structured, is LSU can only have 105 dudes on that team. And whether LSU wants to give all 105 full-ride scholarships, whether they want to give 85 full-ride scholarships and then have the rest of the people be walk-ons, that's up to them. Mm-hmm. The SEC earlier this week said, hey, for the first year as a conference, we're going to stick to 85 scholarships and you'll just have a smaller number of walk-ons. But that could change in a year or two. Other schools could potentially decide to go more. That will be one of the conversations each athletic department has to have. And maybe one reason why you would offer fewer scholarships is for that exact reason. If we can go get the collective or somebody else to pay the tuition, we could save the proverbial salary cap room for somebody else.
So where do tuitions fit in with salary? Because it is and then taxable income. If the colleges are going to – and you have to go slow with me here because my eyes tend to glaze over. Matt, so LSU can have 105 guys dressed out, right? I mean, on a team.
Yep.
On a team. They can choose to travel with however many they want. They're probably not going to take all 105. They can have 105 on scholarship if they want, as this changes?
If the House settlement is approved, they could. The SEC central office has said, hey, because we're trying to recruit for next year, and we don't know if this settlement's going to get approved until April, and that's not enough time. For next season, let's stick to 85. But for 26, 27, 28, they could theoretically move that up up to 105.
And how does the model change from name, image, and likeness? Tell you what, this might be a good time to stop and digest what we've heard so far. And
I know, it's
about
a lot.
Yeah, it is. And name, image, and likeness to schools directly paying players. And if that's the case, I don't know if a scholarship is currently taxable or not. Does that become taxable income? Or does the school choose to pay the player and then a player pays tuition? I don't know. We'll talk more when we come back. If you've got any questions about this, I don't blame you because it's very complicated. Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, talking about the changes in college sports, which, like it or not, are here. And one thing I do want Matt to talk about when we come back, as he always does, is the fallacy that college athletes have never been paid. Because, Matt, bring it back for a second, Tim. Matt, this goes back to what, the 20s?
At least, really before then,
And I always look at college football starting in the 20s, when in fact it was before that because they have 100th anniversary of games. We'll be back in a flash. Tommy Tucker, WWL.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, 9:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, about the House case, which is not to be confused with the House of Representatives. It's about, correct me if I say anything inaccurate here, because I'm going to try to sum it up, Matt. It's about a college swimmer, a class action suit that was a lot of other people joined onto. It's about college athletes who say, wait a minute. The equivalent, in a way, of Reggie Bush getting his Heisman Trophy back, where it's like, well, wait a minute, you didn't pay me now because you said it was illegal. Now you're paying other college players. Where's my money? Accurate?
That's good enough for radio, my friend. Right, yeah, okay. That's exactly accurate.
You could have a briefs that fill a room, I would think, of this case. So When it comes now to colleges directly paying players and scholarships, as opposed to, they can have 105 players, say, for football. Let me get back to the class action case for a minute. When you said volleyball players could be paying getting checks of $18, basketball players $100,000, how are they going to decide who gets what based on what?
That's a great question. So you have two different pots of money. You have the money that you're paying for back penalties for athletes who have previously competed, and you have the money you're going to pay current athletes. And the exact formula for how the previous athletes are going to be paid is one of the things that's still being worked out and finalized and argued over the coming months. So that's part of why this settlement isn't completely 100% approved. But the way that people in the industry are talking about it, and the way that the plaintiff's attorneys are talking about it, is that the formula will skew towards who was on TV the most, who drove the most financial value, which would mean that 90% of that back pay would go to football and men's basketball players. Those are the individuals that have been on TV and drive the value for the largest television contracts. Schools will have the ability to decide how they want to share that money moving forward between all of their athletes. One of the difficult questions that schools are still grappling with is, what does it mean to be Title IX compliant and how we directly share revenue with athletes? Do we only have to pay the same number of men and women, but not the same amount of money? Do we have to share the same amount of money? Is there no Title IX component to any of this because it's not educational funds or opportunities? And the answer is, nobody knows. Because the White House hasn't told us, and now we have a new White House. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's kind of flying blind until there's a lawsuit and a judge clarifies it.
Wow, so many questions. So
I know.
When it comes to colleges directly paying athletes, are we on, not a scholarship, not a grant in aid, as they used to call it, none of that. It's like, okay, look, you come play here, I guess according to the NCAA, and this may sound ridiculous, but you'd have to be enrolled in school. Although now, if you look at Joe Burrow's last year at LSU, I think he was in graduate school, took one course, and that was online. So the only time he set foot on campus, as I remember it, was to go to football practice. So I guess you would still have to be enrolled in school or not. I don't know.
So these are actually good questions. And the way that it's set up right now, which could always change, the way that's set up moving forward, is that you still have the scholarship and grant and aid package, and then you have money that's directly from the school that's on top of that. You have to realize that when you get a full-ride athletic scholarship, whether it's to play football at LSU or volleyball at Tulane or anybody else, you're not just getting tuition. You're also getting room and board. You're getting food, and college athletes need more food than you and I do. Mm-hmm. You're getting an apartment or a dorm. You're getting the training table. You're getting health insurance. You're getting some of these extra things.
Health care, right?
Health care, right? Academic tutoring, maybe even some cash in the form of Alston payments. So the total financial value of that entire package could be north of six figures. And right now, it's not taxable.
Ah.
In the event that some athletes are made employees, which may or may not happen in the future, and that becomes part of the benefits of an employee compensation package, then it would become taxable. And then that changes things. Then you have, so that's as of right now, like nothing, the current status quo for what the school can give for a scholarship package, that doesn't change. The house money is extra. Because then a school for the first time could say, hey, we just sold this new advertising deal with Learfield where we're going to put Joe Burrow's face, assuming, you know, pretending Joe Burrow is still the quarterback, on a bunch of billboards in his LSU stuff to promote LSU tickets. And because Joe Burrow's face is on there, we're going to pay Joe $50,000 for that advertising campaign. They couldn't do that before. Now they can, and then Joe would pay taxes on that because that's income. Rather than 50 grand for LSU football players, that number might end up being $220,000, could be 270. They could still get their own deals. But you kind of have to treat this as a separate pot of money that now the university and sport general managers have to figure out the best way to both legally and efficiently share with their athletic, with their players.
If
I know.
Yeah. So, again, I'm going to ask, and maybe you answered me, and maybe I just didn't get it, and I'm not trying to badger the witness, Your Honor, but...
No, it's okay.
If the House settlement is approved, and we'll get to what would that would mean, what that would entail in a minute, or what would that have to happen for that to occur, would colleges then directly pay players or not?
Yeah, they could. And so, and here's the interesting thing. They don't have to. Each individual school has the option to opt into the settlement terms or not. LSU, assuredly, as would everybody in the SEC, absolutely would.
Because otherwise they open themselves up to further litigation, right?
But not just potential litigation, but also how could you possibly recruit against Alabama if Alabama says we opted in and we're going to directly cut our players a $200,000 check in addition to everything else and LSU isn't, and the SEC... You would be completely uncompetitive. The more interesting question is, what does McNeese do? Mm-hmm. What does CELA do? What do some of these Southland institutions do? Because the settlement might say, hey, you are permitted to share up to $20 million in athletic revenue. And then maybe McNeese goes and they look at the budget and they go, brother, we don't make $20 million.
Right.
I can't share what we don't have. And so maybe they opt in. Maybe they don't.
All right, so they came upon that $20, $21 million. How? Where'd that number come from?
That's a great question. A cynic might say out of thin air. Mm-hmm. A less cynical person would say they came to that number by trying to approximate a 50-50 split between institutions and players, but they were counting all of the money that's spent on scholarships and training tables and grant and aids and everything else as to the players. And so the difference is this, you know, across the major schools is $20 million. Whether that's true or not, I couldn't tell you because I'm not working from the same spreadsheets that these attorneys are.
What would effect would this have on HBCUs?
A very good question. Because
well, that's why I'm here,
sure,
Matt.
Many of you,
gave me the job because occasionally I come up with a good one every now and then.
Right. As I'm sure your listeners are aware, HBCUs in this country are not blessed with anywhere close to the same athletic or institutional financial resources as their PWI and state flagship peers. So there's one school of thought that says the HBCUs simply won't opt in. And they'll say, listen, we all know what Alcorn's budget is. I was actually just looking at it before we hopped on the call here for another project. We don't have the money to share with those athletes. We want to have larger rosters because we want to increase to enrollment for our schools. we're not going to do it. And if a player decides to go to LSU over, you know, FAMU, that's fine, because FAMU was never going to win that battle anyway. They could do that. They could decide to opt in and then just share a very small amount of money. They might say, listen, we don't have any, we're not going to give you any of our current money, but if we sell new sponsorship revenue together, we'll cut you a deal on that. And that's something that a lot of low majors are telling me and telling their commissioners they are going to do. We're not going to share any new cash because we don't have it, but we'll opt into the settlement so we have the mechanism to do it before. But it is difficult for me to see any of this as a way to level the playing field in competition. I think this is another thing that the richest schools will be able to handle, and the middle and lower class of schools really won't.
Surprisingly, only 22 players made the cut in the entire NFL. That was as of August 27th. I don't know what the number is now, but only 22 players in the NFL represent HBCUs. I thought the number would be higher than that, but there is also a thought that the way college football has changed, that has already hurt HBCUs and their programs. Accurate?
Yeah, I mean, we're never going to go back to the days in the 60s mm-hmm. when you would send 8 dudes from Jackson State every year to the NFL, because those players can go to, are not limited to just a handful of Northern schools and HBCUs. And that's true not just for athletes, right? That's true for talented students. Our talented black students all over the country may and do decide to go to LSU, to Tulane, to Texas, all over. And so the recruiting ground for HBCUs is different. Setting aside all of the ways that those schools have been shortchanged as institutions over the last couple of decades, I think it is a difficult recruiting pitch to tell somebody who could go to a big-time Division I institution, you should come here, where you won't have the resources, you won't be on television as much, you won't have some of the same academic bells and whistles or facility bells and whistles, just because this is where your parents went, other reasons. Some players will do that, but the financial gap is just enormous for most of those schools.
How important are athletic programs to HBCUs?
I think deeply for many of them, right? You know, part of this is the trope that you hear in higher education administration circles is that college sports is the front porch of the university. Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets overstated a little bit, but there really is a lot of truth to it, particularly for HBCUs. One of the biggest ways you get alumni to come back on campus, to come back and give both money and time and remain affiliated, that's at homecoming. And that's in a different culture, in a different way than it is for many PWIs or other state institutions, a way to remain relevant in your state house, to remain relevant and constantly communicating with your community is through sports. And I actually think that's even more true for some smaller HBCUs that are in the CIAA or playing Division II, where those events have an outsized cultural influence. The way to keep HBCUs at the Division I level competitive and engaged and part of this whole process is really difficult. It's part of the reason why some congressional bills in the last Senate over NIL regulation fell apart was specifically over how to include HBCUs in that mix.
Let me take a break. We'll get some more questions from the text line, 504-260-1870. We're talking to Matt Brown, I'm sorry, the publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, about this House settlement, and then I want to talk about Ted Cruz and his reelection, what role that could have in this, and what he had to say, National Labor Relations Board. So many questions are coming in. And also what effect this would have on different sports at different schools. If you have any questions, 504-260-1870. The newsletter again, Matt, if people want to subscribe and really dig deep into this.
You can find it at extrapointsmb.com. If you're in the great state of Louisiana, this is a newsletter that's read by folks in the administration and coaching staffs at LSU and Tulane and the University of New Orleans and all throughout the region in multiple conference offices. If you want to read what they're reading, you can subscribe for free at extrapointsmb.com.
And I know you're not from here, but for people that don't want this to happen, the parade has already passed. Now we're just cleaning up after, right? Accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I would say that's 90% accurate.
All right. 9:40, 20 till 10. Traffic Now, WWL. All right, back quickly to Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. I got to go back, Matt, because I'm getting some texts about this, and I'm a little bit confused myself about academic eligibility. And if you're an employee of the school, the janitor doesn't have to go to class. Well, I guess the professor does have to go to class, but he's teaching the class. The HR people don't have to go to class. Who would dictate academic requirements for these so-called, in parentheses, student athletes?
Well, if we do go to a world where athletes become employees or some athletes become employees, what will dictate that is the contract, right? The janitor's contract doesn't say that the janitor has to be an enrolled student or do anything, but there's nothing stopping the school or even a public union from making that part of the contract. I think most janitors would say that's unreasonable, and so I won't take the janitorial gig.
Yeah, but let me turn it around. But if it would mean that you wouldn't get the janitor or the HR representative that you wanted, what would force you to put that in there? Who's going to enforce that schools that the athletes are going to have to go to class?
Well, right now, the NCAA academic eligibility standards haven't changed. There's still an enforcement mechanism. If you don't make APR, if you're not making academic progress, you could still be sanctioned and removed from the postseason. Your institution still gets money for hitting particular academic benchmarks, and the House settlement doesn't change any of those things.
Right.
What potentially could be employment, which hinges on a couple of court cases and could change depending on what the Trump administration and what this new Congress decides to do, but that hasn't happened yet.
Well,
if it does, then it becomes up for negotiation.
Let's talk about that then with the NLRB and Ted Cruz and what he said about all of this. Go ahead, please.
Sure. So to kind of zoom out here for a little bit, we have a couple of legal cases working their way through that challenge the idea that college athletes, or at least some college athletes, should not be employees. We have a case centered around athletes, FCS football players in Pennsylvania. That's in district court. That's Johnson v. NCAA. We have a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board in Boston concerning Dartmouth men's basketball. And we have another one for the NLRB in Los Angeles about USC and UCLA. There's been an additional complaint filed about Notre Dame. That one hasn't been opened or started yet. And among legal observers who have, I think, looked at how the Supreme Court handled Alston and how the Supreme Court has looked at antitrust cases with the NCAA and other courts and decided, if this continues, eventually enough courts are going to say that at least football and basketball players should be employees, potentially more expansive. That's why the NCAA for several years has been lobbying Congress for a law that makes it very clear that college athletes aren't. And that's something that Congress can change over the last several years.
The college athletes aren't employees?
Yes. Yeah. That is what the NCAA and the SEC and the Big Ten would like, is a federal law that says college athletes, whether they're LSU football players or Northwestern state tennis players, are not athletes. That's what the NCAA wants.
Look at you, Northwestern
and
state.
And they haven't been able to get
demons.
It. I'm sorry, that's right. Yeah, right now, when we had either Democrats controlling the three bodies or we had divided government, that bill couldn't happen. It didn't even really get that close. You had Democratic lawmakers who opposed the idea of preventing athletes from seeking that status. You had Democratic lawmakers who wanted to tie that to other bills, like expanding athlete health care or changing the Olympic model. You generally had more conservatives sympathetic to the NCAA, but you had some who weren't, because it will be restricting the economic earning potential of many people. The conventional wisdom now is, now that Donald Trump has won election, is going to be president again, Republicans are going to have 54 Senate seats. Ted Cruz is going to be the head of the Finance Committee, and he's already signaled several times, hey, NIL reform and college athletics reform is very important to me. It's entirely possible, if not probable, that this next Congress could say, okay, new law, forget, doesn't matter what the courts say. College football players can't be employees. They have to be students. We're going to codify NCAA amateurism rules.
But that again, that kind of sends a mixed message for a conservative, because you would think, well, then, wait a minute, it's America. You can make as much money as you want if you work hard, or it's protecting a big, giant business, right?
So, yes, and that's the conventional wisdom, and I guess I should be careful saying this in this market, but it is the truth.
Tell the truth. I mean, that's what I'm doing.
Here's the truth. You have some conservative lawmakers who think other things are more important in some cases than access to free enterprise or capitalism, whether that might be preserving, in their view, a uniquely American institution like college athletics, whether it might be racial or cultural animosity, whether that's to higher education specifically, or not wanting to empower what they perceive to be loudmouth, immature black athletes, whether that's because they have a personal relationship with some very conservative coaches, which might be the case here with Tommy Tuberville. There's lots of reasons, right? I mean, like, tariffs aren't particularly free market, and we just elected a president who said on TV every day, yes, I'm going to position tariffs. I'm going to claw back the free market and have more regulation in other places. And that is exactly what many conservatives feel of specifically about college sports.
So what's happening in sports with this whole thing, and what could happen, is a microcosm what's happening with conservative philosophy, where the old conservative thought of free enterprise and government get out of the way is free enterprise and government get out of the way, except for when I think this. Accurate?
In my professional opinion, I think that is accurate, right? And I think the most charitable way I could say that would be a conservative saying, we need free market in some places, and we need the arm of the state to be aggressive and clawing back overreach in other institutions, right? Like, we need the arm of the state to punish or claw back higher education or Hollywood or these other places.
Real quick, yeah. Before I run out of time, Matt, so if they do pass a law saying that college athletes cannot be paid, what does that do with the House settlement?
Well, the likely law isn't that college athletes can't be paid. The likely law, there's very, very few, there's a couple, but very few lawmakers now want to go back to a world where athletes can't be paid at all. What they are more likely to do is pass a law saying athletes cannot be employees. And so the House settlement will then function as something of an unnegotiated collective bargaining agreement.
And what happens with name, image, and likeness?
Precisely. And there could be some very significant clawbacks on NIL, you could have a rule where these deals have to be reported and regulated, and we can't pay a guy $200,000 to give one speech and sign one autograph. It's got to be about economic fair market value. Any of these rules will result in less money going to elite football players. I feel very confident saying that.
Say that part again.
I feel very confident that any conservative passed legislation will result in less money going to elite football players and elite men's basketball players.
But not less going
at the top end.
But not less going to the institution.
And potentially not less going to athletes, period, right? It will just mean that they're taking aim at the bagman market, which, as you and I have talked about a couple of times, has existed, particularly in this part of the country, for well over 100 years.
Matt, thank you so much. You got to come back. Never enough time. Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. We'll take a quick break. Back in a flash, WWL.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.